I don't think I've written longhand poems for yonks. I just love writing straight to the screen, and I like to see them shape up on the screen so you can see the actual shape of the poem as you're writing it, and it's so easy to edit. You know, you think of a better word and you put it in. But I try not to edit too much.
So they come up very quickly. That's interesting, your poems.
Yeah, often. But I think it's because they're the back of your head anyway. And you're mulling them over before you actually commit them to type, in my case.
Is it something that makes you chuckle? You get some sort of few words that...
Yeah. Yes, it's keywords, usually. Or a little phrase or something. And you kind of get hold of it and take it for a walk and see where you end up. Yeah, so it's just the love of the words themselves. I just love words. You know, and the things you can do with them, and they're just totally malleable as far as I can see. I honestly don't think I do enough wordplay. I mean, one of the problems of only having a very short time to do things is that you do compose stuff in your head, but half of it goes, you know, before you actually get to it. You think, oh, that was great. Oh, what was that? Oh, it was good, though. So, you know, I can't suddenly... break off my work and start writing poetry, because I wouldn't have much work left, would I?
maybe they'll have a poet in residence and you're already it.
yeah,
a likely thing, eh? You've written quite a few poems about your parents, and the Republic of Ted was really dedicated to your father's memory. And I wondered actually if you would read the poem that opens that book.
Yeah, the title is Transmission Lines. And it's called that because my father worked on the transmission line in Ford's factory, where he was making cogs for Ford cars. That's what he did when he wasn't being a coal miner or a window cleaner or whatever. Working in a biscuit factory. It was mostly on the production line at Ford's. And this is Transmission Lines. My father built these rooms of love with the strength of his own hands. He daily made each sacrifice protective fatherhood demands. Monotonous, compelling need drove this toil of obligation through the oil of grim machines, coursed the stream of his provision. He marched among the factory crowds throughout the sameness of his days. Clocking on and clocking off, he laboured for a weekly wage. His hands were grimed, his skin was rough, yet tender was his warm concern. He whispered calm into my fright when courage failed and fever burned. His work was food upon our plates, his laughter was our daily bread. The common currency was care in that republic built by Ted.
It's really lovely, that.
That sums him up for me.
Yeah.
And it's very much my own life now. I've stopped clocking on and off, but I used to do it a lot. As an apprentice and when I worked in factories, you know. So the engineering connection carries on, you know, to me from my dad. So that connection, hopefully it'll stop somewhere, because I really don't like engineering. I'd much rather be a writer and paid for it, but dreams are free, eh?
At least you are writing and being published.
Oh, it's great. It's my other life. I mean, I feel like Jekyll and Hyde. And I have this one draft, like being a draftsman and working with numbers and machines all day, well, drawing machines anyway. And then I have fabulous little holidays in Edinburgh when I'm reading at the Fringe, and, you know, and I'm suddenly, it's Eddie the poet.
Altogether, yeah. That's right, not Eddie the draftsman, Eddie the poet.
Eddie the draftsman, Eddie the poet, you know. I could have been called worse things, I thought.
Oh, well. Well, you probably are.
I have.
What makes you think not?
Often by my publisher.
There's another one which it's quite funny. You're just talking about numbers. I mean, this is quite a numberish poem in a sense, if you want to get quantum about it.
Yes. This is one of rare ventures into physics. I quite like the idea of doing quantum physics poetry. I'd like to do a book called Physics for Drunks. I think that'd be a great little poetry book. But this is a starter. Schrödinger's Cat Flap. The cat flap is closed. Is the cat inside or outside? The pessimists answer. The cat is inside, curled up on the rug. The optimists answer, the cat is outside, under a truck. Schrödinger's answer, the cat is both inside and outside at the same time. The poet's answer, who cares if the cat is sat on the mat, or the cat is splat and flat? The world is all imagining. The rhyme's the thing.
The rhyme's the thing.
It's the poet's point of view of the world. We put ourselves right at the front of it. If it rhymes, it's good.
I suppose that when I very first heard you, it was the wordplay.
Yeah.
And you just touch a funny bone. And these poems were really... Many of your poems actually do that for me. You know, I just get that really sort of, ooh, that's funny, and remember it again. And you've chosen some odd themes. So there's one about Jesse James, and one's about shopping. What about the Jesse James one?
Okay. All this really comes from my dad, because my dad was doing this all the time. He was always cracking jokes and playing, changing words around to make us laugh. So that was his hobby. He should be the poet in the family, really. He should have had books out. I'm just doing it for him now. This is Jesse James Joyce. The day's been as glum as a poet's accountant. A little more adventure wouldn't go amiss. So I'll saddle up my poems and head them all out west. I'll be the lone rhymer, gunning for maverick metaphors and vigilante verses with silver bullet six-shooters. Who was that masked muse? Or dressed up all in black atop a palomino, catching Davy Crockett's hat falling at the Alamo. Poem, poem on the range, where desperado couplets dressed in ponchos and sombreros pass out on tequilas in El Paso haciendas. I'll be Jesse James Joyce with a Stevie Smith and Wesson, ambushing the Pony Express for Seamus Heaney's first editions. I'll powwow with Cachise inside a ring of fire, trading buffalo hides for bows of burning gold and arrows of desire. Several boys named Sue will jostle for a view. Sitting Bull will have to stand to see above the crowd as I read aloud Custer's last stanza. Then I'll scalp Andrew Motion and become the first poet laureate. All right, should we do a shopping forecast?
Yeah, a shopping forecast would be good. So you've done several poems around the activity of shopping.
Yeah, I hate it. I'm the worst shopper in the world. I'd rather do anything than go shopping. But I suppose it's that morbid fascination I have with it. The shopping forecast, issued by the Dole Office at 19:30 on Thursday, 8th of June. There are warnings of sales in Fraser's, Debenhams, Esselmont and Macintosh. The general shopping list at 1300. Iceland, North Utsira, South Utsira. 10p off at Iceland while stocks last. Lerpak, £1.06, decreasing 5 or 6p by 1300 tomorrow. North Utsira, South Utsira. Faroes Cromarty Co-op. Fisherman's Friends reduced to tears. Automatic lighthouse on the blink. 40-watt light bulbs sold out. German Bite, biscuit, thin as air. Strudels, hobnobs, 5p off. Peckish, becoming famished 1 or 2. Decreasing 3 or 4 dress sizes. Gale, Forced, 8. Isle of Jura, Bailey's Rum. 70p off 70 centilitres. Westerly, veering uncertainly, becoming paralytic after 6 or 7. Occasional slurring, dribble, poorly later. Hiking, base rate, robber bank. Variable, becoming high, extortionate for a time. APR 20 or 30, MasterCard and Visa low. Hard rain, overdraft increasing 100%, poor. Viking, 40s, good sense of humour. Low 100 miles south of Shetland. Would like to meet Siren or Silky. No Mermaids. Rising northwesterly in anticipation. That is the end of the shopping forecast. I wrote that in the pub at lunchtime.
Oh,
in one sitting.
Fun.
Pretty well, apart from a couple of editing I did. I went round to the pub and it just came into my head and there it went.
It's really
It wrote
grand.
Itself. I love them when they do that.
It really is good fun. My heart sank when I heard you'd been writing football poems, but I was buoyed up by the fact that I really do like Alistair Finlay's football poems. And I have watched football, but I'm more interested in watching the men's thighs, really, than anything. Well, I mean,
I don't look that low.
I don't know about that. I sort of quite like the high spots of it, you know, like penalty shootouts and all those things.
Or
when Gretna nearly won, and that kind of moment. Was that against, again?
I can't remember. I was watching the English one. I was watching Liverpool play West Ham that day.
Oh.
Was it Hearts? It might have been Hearts.
Oh, it was some really big thing if Gretna had. Anyway, these sort of romantic moments, I can really enjoy those.
Yeah.
And then I really watched the game. But the thought of someone writing poetry about it, poems about football, and they do connect in so strongly to your childhood. It's almost like this has become the kind of thread of autobiography from football. You describe everything from being a wee Wayne. Bottle job. Well, that's probably your youngest football memory, is it?
It certainly is. Bottle job. I was a toddler when I first kicked a ball. It was a beauty. It flew from my booty and knocked my brother's bottle out of his toothless gob. Waving my bib, I did a ruthless streak past his cot, then dribbled the bottle around the settee and thought, this game's for me.
Yeah, it's grand, isn't it?
It's a good memory. Terrific dribble, though. I wish we'd had Match of the Day or Sky TV to catch that on camera. Fantastic. But I can move on slightly in age from that for my next poem. And this is the one I think everyone who gets hooked on football, this is the kind of memory you have of playing football with your mates way after tea time. You know, the nights are drawing in, suddenly you're playing in the dark. It's called the Starlight Cup. Two coats are best for posts, the bar defined by stars, the ball, a small elusive animal at twilight. Two kids are best for this game without a name, this thrall, this all-consuming spell of moonlight. Hours are devoured, dark as the park. In a blink, the sink estate fades from view. Sounds are muffled, baffled in the lee of trees. Only one stark bark pierces through. The dream team plays deep into the night. No fright will scare them aware, shake their belief that there's no relegation from imagination. Nothing in the street can beat this wakeful sleep. The prize they win tonight is theirs to keep.
Michael Mara, he's written a few amazing things.
Losing streak.
All right.
We might as well go for it.
We don't know about these things.
We've got to do it. I think it's time we brought streaking back into the game, especially with Sky TV. You know, liven it up a bit. Losing streak. A naked man is running onto the pitch, followed by 10 stewards and one policeman. We can't allow this. He must be stopped. The naked man is wrestled to the ground. Hooray, we cry. Hooray. The naked man is handcuffed and frog-marched. A policeman holds his helmet over his helmet. A naked woman runs onto the pitch, we ask, if she has some friends who'd like to join her. That's very much a bloke's poem.
Oh, it's a bloke's poem. Yeah. How are they going down, your football poems?
They seem to go down quite well at readings. A lot of people, I mean, as you did say, the subject matter doesn't really grab them, but they seem to have liked, you know, what I've done with the poems and hopefully made them more interesting than the game for some people. I mean, but my real motivation behind doing football poetry is to really try to get poets to like football. I mean, there's not enough poets out there who are into football. And I think they'd probably write better and be nicer people if they did. Because poetry is a great bringing together of the nations and into squares, and they can fight each other in the warmth and comfort, you know, of their own backyards.
Oh yeah, well, of course you've got those two in there, the green train and the blue train, about fighting each other. These are well, they're kind of complementary, if you like.
They've got to be. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, you can't have one without the other. No,
you can't
it.
Mention Celtic no. without mentioning Rangers.
Right. So, what you're going to start with? The green train.
I'll start with the green train because it's there first.
Right. That's
it's on the left-hand page.
In the next edition, I think it'll be in the right-hand page, probably, won't it?
We'll have to shift them about.
Have the left-hand. Well,
carry never on. Mind. Yeah, on the green train. I got on at Montrose and sat next to the Pope and his wife, who were on vacation from the Vatican. They always travelled virgin. They were short on conversation, but were polite in a Teutonic sort of way. He polished his lederhosen and hot pants, while she polished off the after-Lent mints. He asked if I liked his Reservoir Boys t-shirt, which I did. Kiri Eliason, Johnny Hartson, he muttered mysteriously. Then, Borok, Marshall, McGovern, the goalie trinity. And, McGeady crosses better than me. He seemed to find this amusing, and he chuckled to Dundee. As they alighted at St. Andrews for a spot of golf, he blessed me twice for sneezing. Then a Rangers fan got on. Hey, you, was that the Pope I just passed on the platform? He inquired. That is a correct assumption, I replied. Bloody strange things, trains, he said. I nodded in confirmation. You have to note that these Celtic and Rangers supporters all come from Liverpool in these poems. It's quite interesting when they speak.
You couldn't have given a quick giggle, a giggle gap. I can't hold in all my giggles.
All right. Have a drink. Have
for
a drink.
For the whole poem.
Calm down.
Right.
I'll get on the next one quick before.
Yeah, right then.
On the blue bus, I got on at Govan and sat next to Ian Paisley and his wife, who were on a fortnight shouting holiday. He was big on conversation and very polite in an aggressive sort of way. She was having woman troubles and sat quietly decommissioning her knitting needles. Then Mr. Paisley's conversation took on a familiar pattern. Which team do you follow? And does your father wear the sash? When I sashayed around this question, he muttered mysteriously. Glory, glory, David Murray. Then, oranges are the only fruit. And, can you play the flute, boy? Play the flute. We were joined by the inspector, another Ibrox shouter, and they got on like a barricade on fire. They argued for the old 4-4-2 against the current 3-5-2 and denounced the Reformation. Aghast at this faux pas and seeing many scars from the faux parkhead, the inspector let him off at Renfrew Cross. Then the Celtic fan stood up. Hey, wee big man, was that Paisley there? No, I replied, still two stops to go.
It's great fun, it really is.
It's great fun writing them, I tell you.
Oh dear, yeah, that's it. Outside other people's writers, it's lovely quiet, they're in the room writing, and you'll be giggling, snorting,
giggling,
and rushing in saying, look at this.
Look what I just did. Don't know where it came from, but just out my head.
Oh, it's good. It is a bit, it's actually a wee bit mysterious where things do come from. It's really funny, isn't it, that kind of thing out of the ether. And the nature of language, I mean, I'm not going to go all serious, but it is a pretty mysterious thing.
Yeah.
It is. It's not just quite what it seems to be. It's a bit like that Schrodinger's cat thing.
No. And poems aren't quite what they seem to be either. They often end up quite different place to where you thought they might. Unless you actually start with the killer dilla line, the punchline. Sometimes they do. You've got a punchline, you just build above that to get to the title.
Right,
you build back. Yeah, you build backwards. But quite often, you think of an idea and you start going one way and then suddenly it'll just flip and it goes somewhere entirely different. There's one here which Peter Burnett, said to me, "How on earth did you get from that to that?" And I said, "Just the way it came out, just the thought." And
let's hear that one. I just developed it
from there. Right, this is football associations, and this is a game. Throughout the book, I'm really relating the game on the pitch to the life outside the stadium. You know, usually my life, or to do with my childhood or adolescence, and hoping other people will latch on to some of these ideas. And this is football associations. Early inklings of crucial connections. The bicycle pump, the Casey adapter, the screw-in stud, all were somehow connected with mud, the true element of childhood, along with blood. The pump connected to the ball, the stud connected to the boot connected with someone's head, another little bleeder bled. Saturdays were matinees in picture houses, swizzles, love hearts, sugar-coated Disneys, then out into the drizzle and a dash for a bus, to the playing fields, your kit wrapped in a towel. Then, almost overnight, the game changed. It was as if your brain had been rewired to your trousers, all previous connections severed. Lumps appeared everywhere, especially in blouses. All the houses in your street became bordellos of rioting hormones with nowhere to go. I Am Curious Yellow was the show which you hoped might have trailers of the vital action to follow. The flirt, the kiss, the fumble on her parents' settee. But especially the X-rated edits of Carnal Nights. Hold your breath at the credits as your name up in lights.
That was great, Eddie. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.